Global markets slide after President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump test positive for COVID-19. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. U.S. stock futures are off their early lows, down now between 1 and 1.5%. On this side of the world, benchmarks in London, Frankfurt, and Paris are down as much as 0.8% after the president tweeted he and his wife have begun their quarantine in Washington. The pair says they're feeling good, and the White House doctor says the president will carry out his duties without disruption. Mrs. Trump has canceled all of her upcoming events. Karen Ward, chief market strategist at J.P. Morgan Asset Management, explains jitters in financial markets today are a reflection of the difficulty in predicting the economic implications of this election.
It's another reminder that the virus is still with us. It's still creating difficulties. It's still being transmitted. We've got clearly a second wave in Europe, and we're seeing an upturn in parts of the United States, like New York as well. And the restrictions that are required to limit its transmission have economic consequences. So I think whilst it's unclear and it's too early to draw clear implications for how it will change the outcome on November the 3rd, I think just the near-term markets are rattled by the uncertainty and another demonstration that the virus is a problem.
The reaction we've seen so far this morning has been decisive, but not dramatic. So do you think this could be the start of just a period of more intense volatility, that we're going to be waiting for every tweet, every update from both campaigns?
Before this announcement, we were expecting this to be a very volatile couple of months. It's not just the US election. We have Brexit negotiations ongoing. The measures that are going to be required globally to contain the virus, and whether there will be stimulus required to offset. Because obviously in the spring, when we were seeing the shutdowns that were required, we saw fiscal stimulus that has effectively absorbed the loss for both economies and therefore for investors. So there are tremendous uncertainties as we look forward. And this news just adds to all those uncertainties.
As you've said, this will potentially have implications for the U.S. election. But what about some of the big geopolitical issues that have been rumbling right alongside it, like an escalating feud with China over trade, as you mentioned, a new post-Brexit trade deal with the U.K.?
The relationship with the U.S. and the rest of the world is certainly one of the factors we've been considering as we've looked towards November the 3rd and what different candidates have been saying. The tough on China approach has been fairly common across both parties, although that will be a key narrative in the run-up to the election. We don't think it will end up in significant action as we head into 2021, purely because China is very integrated into the global system. We've been here before. It's actually very hard to follow through on trade hostilities because it actually comes back to her activity in the United States or elsewhere in the world. So we've sort of viewed this as a key contributor to volatility rather than something that would make us meaningfully change our investment strategy.
We didn't see this kind of broad global market reaction when other leaders, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, for example, were hospitalized with COVID-19. What makes this announcement from the White House today different?
It's the timing. I mean, this is a very critical period, certainly looking at the swing states. It did look like Biden has the lead in a number of those. President Trump had some work to do, perhaps, in the coming months, and the campaign would need to be very active. As you say, the market reaction is not dramatic. It's been relatively muted. I think it's more about how this contributes to the uncertainty rather than a clear new direction of travel.
Karen Ward, chief market strategist at J.P. Morgan Asset Management. Thanks for breaking this down.
Thank you.
Well, it was thin trade in Asia this morning, with markets in China, South Korea, and Hong Kong closed for a holiday. The Tokyo Stock Exchange, though, did successfully reopen today after a hardware failure yesterday forced it to stop all trading. The Nikkei ended down 0.7%, reversing early gains following that news about President Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis. Coronavirus has changed a lot about our everyday lives, including how we use coins and cash. Business closures caused coin supply in America to dry up earlier this year, and the U.S. Mint has been operating at full capacity since June to get 1.6 billion coins in circulation each month for the rest of the year. Here in the U.K., though, the opposite is happening. Coins are in such low demand that the Royal Mint will, for the next decade, stop making 2p and 2 pound coins. So what's the big difference in the way British and American shoppers use their money? Natalie Sini is the chair of financial technology group Innovate Finance.
One of the big trends over the last decade in the UK has been a massive switch away from cash towards digital payments. So if I go back 10 years, 6 out of every 10 payments were in cash, and that's fallen pretty dramatically during the lockdown. Quite simply, people aren't using cash as much.
Here in the UK, we have technology that lets us tap our cards to make a payment in a shop or on mass transit. We don't have to insert our cards into a reader, enter a PIN, and then go through all that process. Has the ease of technology made the transition to digital payments quicker here than, say, in a place like the US?
Absolutely, yes. What we know with digital payments is when people get used to doing something, the barriers come down. And hey, if you can tap a card to use public transport, you can tap a card to buy your sandwiches, you can tap a card to buy anything. If I illustrate it by talking about Sweden, so Sweden is one of the fastest countries to go digital. Some of it's technology, but some of it is the fact that actually everybody has a bank account. Everybody trusts the government and the banks all work together. And as a result, the banks have all developed seamless technology that whoever you bank with, you can use. And everyone in Sweden can pretty much get banked. Now, if I turn to the US, we've got a technology adoption issue. It's much harder to be an innovator in financial services because of the very regional structure of banking. There is a lot more skepticism about the state and about authority that's sort of inherent in US culture.
Do you think the coronavirus pandemic might force quicker adoption of this kind of technology?
I think it's absolutely certain that coronavirus will accelerate the shift to digital. It's raised a big issue, though, because not everybody can use digital. Even in Sweden, there's been a backlash to the pace of shift to digital payments because not everybody has the ability to use digital payments. In the UK, we estimate that 8 million people cannot at the moment use digital payments for a lot of their needs. And as a result, they really need cash. In the US, it's an even bigger population. What COVID has done is absolutely accelerated the shift towards digital, but it's also shone a spotlight on vulnerability and people who are really getting excluded by our shift to digital.
A fascinating conversation. Natalie Sini, Chair of Innovate Finance. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.